This is Fully Vested, a weekly podcast where Jason Rowley and Graham Peck discuss technology and venture capital investing. This week, we cover the Crunchbase Q2 Global Venture Capital Report. This show was recorded on July 7th. You can learn more at fullyvested.co.
Graham, this is For Better and Worse, the show.
Oh, hey, Jason, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
Good,
so,
good.
Listeners, Jason was just sharing something interesting with me. Jason, how was Hamilton for the first time?
So, not being a terribly big fan of musicals, I went into Hamilton a little bit skeptical. I'm also a little bit skeptical of like anything that lots and lots and lots of people profess to really enjoy. But I went in with an open mind.
And that's why we do this show, right?
What? To
Well, because not a lot of people like it.
Great.
I'm kidding.
An arrow right to the heart. Anyways. So I watched Hamilton for the first time in my life, having not really, like, I've not consumed really any Hamilton media apart from, I forget the name of the song that Lin-Manuel Miranda did way back in like 2010, right? Like what back when he was still like writing and finishing the show, he gave this like performance, of like, I think the title track, like in front of like the Obamas and a whole bunch of other folks, from the sort of like, you know, upper crust of like theater and all the rest, back in Washington, way back in the day. But yeah, no, apart from that, I haven't really consumed any Hamilton media. You know what? It's a gosh darn good musical.
Disney
Plus got their, I got my, $60, you know, out of the year of Disney Plus that I paid for, I guess, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just like going to see it once in person, right? Actually, that'd be cheap. But.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm like, dude, if you can find, $60 Hamilton tickets, in person, maybe now during the time of this pandemic, but certainly not before. I don't think you'd be able to find it for that. But
well, I've seen it twice in person, and it lives up to the hype, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, for sure. Lives up to the hype, in my opinion, too. Your experience, was it both in Chicago?
Both in Chicago, yep.
Nice. Nice. So, yeah, that was my weekend, it's mostly watching Hamilton.
Yeah, this is one of the few 4th of July's I didn't watch a fireworks show. I mean, I certainly heard some. I saw some, you know, non-professional fireworks, but I didn't go watch a professional fireworks show, obviously because of the times that we're living in.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd be very surprised if there was any sort of a professional fireworks show going on at all at this point.
Oh, there certainly were.
Really?
Yeah. Here in glorious Danville, Illinois, there, in fact, was one.
Mm.
There was not. Well, actually, there were two, I think, which I can't believe. But that's a whole other story, I guess.
Probably for next time. Graham, we have some. Well, we have our big main subject that we're going to be talking about this week, which is the Crunchbase Q2 2020 Venture Capital Report. Which I did not write because this is probably a good transition into introductions, which I can go first. Hey, everybody. My name is Jason. I am a researcher at a company called Golden. You can find us at golden.com, San Francisco-based startup seeking to build the canonical source for knowledge. Before that, I worked at Crunchbase, where I was their principal data journalist, working on analyzing all the ins and outs of the venture capital industry using Crunchbase's data set. And I used to write the Crunchbase Venture Capital Report. And I am super excited to talk about it with my friend Graham here today. Graham, who are you?
Do you miss writing it before we get into who I am?
shit dog. That's a big question.
It's a loaded question, isn't it?
I
just for the listening audience out there, I have seen Jason write part of one of these reports.
Yeah, it's true.
And I don't know what kind of fanfare I imagined. Whatever fanfare you would imagine, it's not like that. It's like a guy sitting in front of a computer.
Yeah, it's a guy.
And then magically, boom, a couple days later, charts, graphs, words, things happen. And then somebody else throws some beautiful graphics on the top. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Do I miss writing it?
And this is what, the second report since you've been no longer with Crunchbase?
Yeah, I think that might be, I think that's correct. Do I miss it? Short answer is yes. Long answer is no.
Many words.
Yeah, so short answer being like what I really enjoyed about writing this report was that it, so using Crunchbase data and, you know, both like live data, so like what was currently reflected in Crunchbase's data set at the time, plus the projection, you know, work that we did, you know, to account for, or at least to attempt to account for, undercounted rounds or dollar volume, because of natural reporting delays in the, you know, business of venture. Like that was a really fun, it was really, really fun for a couple of years to really dig deep into that data and figure out kind of like what's going on. And then from my perspective, for whatever that was worth, articulating what I saw for a lot of people to read. And it seemed pretty popular, you know, for the time that I wrote it. But yeah, no, I mean, to your point, Graham, like it is a very. It's a very unglamorous process. It's a lot of just sitting in front of spreadsheets and copy and pasting stuff and then just writing a bunch of stuff on the internet. So.
Well, with that, I am your other co-host.
Graham, I didn't give you the long answer, though.
Oh,
but you go first.
Oh, I was just going to jump into my intro. Oh, I thought that was the long answer.
Well, it was the long answer. Go on.
Yeah, so my name is Graham Peck. I am a venture partner with Midwest-based seed and Series A stage fund Cultivation Capital. Specifically, I am a member of our technology investing team. We invest in B2B, SaaS, software and IT technologies. We have sister funds that invest in life sciences and ag and food tech. In addition to that, I do business development for a kind of small group of companies that do custom software development, build outsource software development teams, primarily in Eastern Europe. And in addition to that, help small businesses with their cybersecurity needs. So stay pretty busy.
Yeah, sounds like it. Speaking of pretty busy, that's a bad transition because you know what was not very busy?
The global venture capital ecosystem
Q2? Yeah, precisely.
Although, you know what? I have to say, and, you know, by the time this airs, we will also have an episode about good news in venture during COVID times. And the article kind of points this out near the top. I'm surprised it's not worse.
Yeah,
I have to say, and maybe that's just me being an optimist, but I'm surprised it's not worse.
Yeah, for sure. So so a couple of top line numbers. So as far as the first half of 2020 goes, this is up until the end of June. Crunchbase, I'm assuming this is projected dollar volume, but Crunchbase projects that there was $129 billion worth of venture transactions worldwide in the first half of 2020, as compared to $138 billion during the first half of 2019. So it's same period 1 year ago, which is all to say that, you know, the first half of 2020 was down, what is that, only about, you know, $9 billion, which really is something of a rounding error, considering that, like, all you need is a couple of really big rounds to skew those dollar volume numbers one way or the other.
Well, yeah, in the report later on, and we can talk about, you know, big rounds at some point, but there was at least one round that was, you know, several billion, north of five, not yep. including acquisitions, of course.
Yep.
So, yeah, literally a couple more big deals, and you could have been actually higher. You know, yeah. And of course, all of this is down from the all-time peak. If you're looking at half-year calendar periods, that would be second half of 2018 with a high watermark of $168 billion. But still, given a global pandemic and, you know, there had already been some slowing throughout 2019, at least in dollar volume, again, I was actually pretty surprised that it wasn't down more than being down only the 7 to 9%, I think, are the round numbers, you know, over same period year before.
Yeah, I mean, but as we will see, as we, you know, talk a little bit more through this report, I think that the reason why things look a little bit rosier in Q2 2020, especially relative to like pre-pandemic times. Because again, like, yeah, just very flatly things are down because of the pandemic. But from before the pandemic, you know, comparing what's going on today versus back then, at least in terms of the dollar volume side, I think that the reason why things don't look worse right now is because we going into the pandemic and all the rest, like, we were very late into a bullish, like a decade long, you know, 12 year long bull run in venture. And, you know, like as the market matured, more and more companies were raising rounds in later and later stages in lieu of going public. And because there was so much late stage capital flowing around in private markets, these companies were able to raise these really, really big rounds. And that is sort of manifest in the data as we end up traversing through it.
You know, one of the other, I thought, optimistic points was that 23.5% of founders, and I don't know, there is a link, in fact, to the survey there, but out of how many is something that I didn't have clicked and open, but 23.5% of founders actually reported increases in revenue, you know, given the pandemic as well. So I thought that was a really good, again, another really good sign overall.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. I'd be very curious to know, like, what that sample looked like. I'm not saying that those numbers are wrong, but, like, I don't know whether, you know, the group that was surveyed was all, like, you know, extremely early stage companies where, you know, any sort of change in, you know, revenues coming in would have really changed that, would have really changed the numbers, et cetera, that they were able to report back in a survey.
So it says that the survey was done in the end of May, and there were 451 early stage founder respondents.
Oh, cool.
And 141 VC respondents.
Oh, so, neat.
Yeah.
Cool. And we'll include a link to that study in the show notes.
Absolutely.
Let us see what was next. So now we get into like the stage by stage stuff. And this is what I was talking about when it comes to like the top line numbers of saying that like dollar volume is only slightly down. that's where I think things get a little bit squirrely. Because, like, when you talk about really early stage funding, like, deal and dollar volume is down. And it looks like deal volume is down sharper than dollar volume. And unfortunately, I don't see a chart here that breaks it out by average deal size. But it looks like, if I was doing some mental math in my head, that the average deal size for seed and angel stage companies is on the decline, at least quarter over quarter.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And then, you know, when it comes to early stage funding, dollar volume is basically flat. You know, it like Crunchbase numbers indicate that there was maybe a $500 million increase relative to Q1 2020, which again was totally a disappointment because of all the pandemic stuff. But you know, although dollar volume is flat, deal volume continues to go down. So at least in this case, it looks like early stage, which Crunchbase defines as Series A and Series B rounds, might be increasing in size. Although, you know, the number of deals is declining, so that might indicate a slightly more risk off attitude by venture investors these days.
Well, I certainly expect, you know, without getting into, you know, strategy that we're using with our portfolio companies directly, but, you know, certainly it makes sense and kind of tracks that a venture investor, if their companies are out raising, might encourage their companies to take more capital now and be sure that given the uncertainty of what's going on, that they had more runway. So in general, I'm guessing venture capitalists would recommend their companies burn a little bit less. Although I have heard, you know, of course, the suggestion of, hey, try a few new and interesting things that you might not have otherwise to just see if some different sales, marketing, or product kind of expansions gain any traction. But, you know, sitting in the seat of a, you know, CEO with unknown kind of future, it's likely, I think, that, you know, venture capitalists, when they're advising their portco CEOs, would be recommending, hey, raise a little bit more money and burn a little bit less money, so that that runway is longer and so that they can have a chance to, you know, kind of hopefully weather the storm, since obviously we're all kind of still looking at an uncertain and unknown kind of future in the short term, short to maybe medium term.
For sure. Graham, not to put you on the spot, but what are some of the, you know, without, you know, getting into a lot of details about, like, you know, which company is doing what or whatever, whatever, what kinds of experiments are, you know, companies that you're seeing, you know, trying to execute right now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is actually looking at kind of the interplay of like product strategy. Ooh. And so I've definitely seen a couple of companies that have just adjusted what and where things are on their product roadmap. So in some cases, they might not be putting new things on or taking things off, but they might be changing the order or time frame over which they're going to accomplish some of their goals.
Yeah.
You know, in particular, I've seen a couple of companies that already had product roadmaps that would benefit from COVID. They would benefit in non-COVID times as well, but they were maybe more beneficial, you know, given the COVID circumstances. And so I've seen some people reorganize their product development roadmap to focus the efforts of their, you know, software and product teams more on the things that might, that they could at least try to gain them traction during the COVID circumstances. You know, and then I think the other thing that's kind of an obvious low-hanging fruit there is that if there were maybe a slate of sales or marketing initiatives that your company might have kind of on the back burner, but that are maybe time-consuming but could be tried with relatively low amounts of capital, you know, I've seen some companies just kind of like, you know, going to the bottom of the stack of the marketing, sales and marketing deck and saying, hey, what are some of the ideas we've wanted to try that we normally don't have any time or capital to try? Because we're going to be pulling back the reins on some of our core sales and marketing spend, things like attending conferences or other types of, you know, sales and marketing driven campaigns. So maybe we'll try some other things that we've always wanted to give a shot to, but we maybe haven't yet given a chance. So I think the main things I've seen is different sales and marketing efforts and reorganization of a product strategy to kind of align with features or products or sub products that that might benefit during the interesting circumstances right now.
Yeah, I mean, and it that seems to make a lot of sense. You know, it feels like at least right now, on the one hand, it feels like things are incredibly tight for most folks and for many companies. But for others, you know, there's a lot of slack in the system that folks can take advantage of and say, you know, hey, like, what are some of the high fly balls that we want to go out and catch or try to catch, and see how those kind of work out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if this is a time when your company happens to be flush with cash for whatever series of reasons, I think it's very likely that there's a lot of software development talent. I mean, that's an area that I spend a lot of my time in addition to venture, as I mentioned in my intro. And, you know, for people out there looking to build software development teams and capability, I mean, people are probably willing to work at lower rates than they would have been interested in before. And obviously the market, which had, you know, previous to the COVID circumstances had, you know, essentially negative unemployment worldwide, which sounds like a complex thing to wrap your head around, although it really isn't. Now the market is flooded with candidates who are in search of new work and probably willing to do it at terms that otherwise before would have been unheard of. So, you know, that's another thing is if you do have budget to hire, it's likely your hiring dollars will go further than they would have 1 to 2 quarters ago. Some other advice, which is not my own, and again, not a member of my team, but something I had heard from another venture investor was, and this is going to sound like the most non-venture advice.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. Is actually don't try to beat your projections because, of course, you know, venture investors, even in global pandemics, want to see their portfolio companies growing and thriving. And, we have kind of a spectrum of companies that are doing better given these circumstances, companies that are nearly unaffected by these circumstances, at least in their, you know, revenue and growth. And we have companies that are certainly not benefiting from or having the moderate to substantial detriment to their business from these, you know, unprecedented circumstances. But again, the advice is don't try to beat your projections. Try to invest in other areas like the things I'm talking about, team growth, sales and marketing initiatives, product development initiatives that are things that are important to the future of your business, but that you otherwise wouldn't have done, and spend the capital you would have spent trying to grow in those ways. Again, to be clear, this is not my own advice. I'm parroting someone else. But I thought that was an interesting, you know, chunk of advice. And it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways because venture capitalists are going to probably give companies as a whole a little bit of a pass during these circumstances. And if you were flat, unless your entire market and industry was like way up, if you were flat during these times, that's probably great. So if you could deploy your resources in a little bit of a different way to take advantage of things that will position you well by having tried these other product sales, marketing, and team initiatives, once we come out of the pandemic and you're poised for new and explosive growth, whether that's next quarter or, you know, 3 or 4 quarters from now, and I hope it's much closer to next quarter than 3 or 4 or more quarters from now, but whatever it is, if you can, you know, put your company in the right position to have explosive growth coming out of this, maybe invest your time, effort, and capital now to be ready for good things after the coronavirus times. So anyway, I thought that was interesting advice.
Yeah.
And again, far be it from me or any venture investor to tell their companies not to grow. Just to be clear, that's not the advice. It's only grow as much as you need to and as much as you and your investors are comfortable with, and then redeploy any what previously would have been surplus but probably poured into sales and marketing and or product, pour that into those same areas in team hiring to the extent you can. But think about different initiatives that will position your business well for coming out of these crazy circumstances.
Well, and while we're in these crazy circumstances, it's always good to be able to meet your leadership and employees, you know, sort of like where they're at in terms of what they're able to get done while at home. Because, you know, I know at least myself and you, Graham, like we, neither of us are married. We don't have kids. We don't have a dog or whatever.
Correct.
Like it's just kind of us, right? But like, yeah. You know, I know, you know, I work with people who have like 2-3 kids at home. It's a different game entirely, you know, when it comes to like trying to get stuff done at home when
your dog or your kid,
yeah,
or
when
whatever,
everybody's at
just,
home,
you know, wander into the back of the, you know, the back of your BBC set.
Graham, you have no idea how many times this happened. Not with any one particular person on our team, but just like over the course of the past couple of months, yeah, there's just been lots of random kids.
Well, I have a friend who has a very nice green screen set up, but he just puts that as the background behind him just to distract everyone else on the calls that he's on.
What is it? Wait, what?
Well, like a video, a looping video of a small child coming in and interrupting, you know, their parent. But it's just video, right? He's sitting in front of a green screen.
Sure.
It's not happening behind him.
No.
But anyway. That was one of the more fun Zoom things that I've, you know, experienced. Anyway.
My God. Dude, I got to up my Zoom game. So
one question that I've got is, do you think that because of the, you know, reporting delays, which we've talked about and touched on in pretty great detail, probably almost every quarter when we do the podcast that visits this report.
Yeah.
Do you think that part of what's going on and why the numbers actually look as good as they do is actually just reporting delays in when rounds are announced, and that, like, for example, next quarter or the quarter or couple quarters after things begin to get better will be much slower to rebound in the numbers? Like, are we still just seeing reporting delay, or are we long enough in the tooth in the pandemic that that really the news is in the venture world is not quite as bad as you might have guessed on the surface?
Yeah. So you asked a very big, that's a big question. And as with most things in this industry, as you well know, the answer is it's complicated and to a certain extent it depends. But like at least when it comes to like these really, really big rounds, you know, there's because like when it comes to talking about the venture space, like deal volume is one thing, but like dollar volume is another. Like deal volume, those numbers definitely do have a reporting delay. You know, at least back when I was at Crunchbase, I don't know if things have changed in the last, you know, six months, whatever it's been. You know, there's it's a documented delay of anywhere between 1 and 4 quarters with a sort of a distribution of companies reporting things more, you know, more like 1 quarter after, a little bit less like 2 quarters after, even less 3 quarters after, yada yada. But like when it comes to dollar volume, really, really big deals have a disproportionate effect on what the final numbers are, sort of almost by definition. And typically in those cases, those deals end up being reported like to the press, you know, in terms of announcements and certainly in terms of like SEC filings, you know, those rounds end up getting disclosed one way or the other, relatively in sync with when they end up being closed, or in sync with when, you know, the company ends up actually quote unquote cashing the check from investors. And so like, no, I don't think that the dollar volume numbers that we're seeing today are necessarily a reflection of, you know, oh, these are all deals that were struck in, you know, like late 2019 or like January 2020 or February 2020 before everything locked down. I think that like the big deals that we see today really are reflective of companies who are going through some sort of a strategic shift in how they operate in response to the pandemic, and accordingly are going out to private markets to go raise capital to, you know, help sustain those, you know, those strategic shifts. And I mean, there's plenty of examples around this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that overall, I mean, I understand that that's just kind of a guess, but
overall,
your guess or your hunch is that, you know, kind of things like these guesstimates of numbers are probably about on par.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again,
especially for dollar volume.
Sure. Right. I mean, deal volume, it's sort of like there's a little bit of squirreliness in deal volume stuff. But like dollar volume, because it's so dominated by, you know, what we called like super giant rounds, like these $100 million rounds or bigger, like because those giant deals weigh so heavily on the market, and, you know, knowing what I know, at least from context and experience, you know, around the reporting patterns around these deals. Yeah, I'm relatively confident in my statement that the really big deals that we're seeing in, you know, through Q2 were actually probably struck during Q2.
Yeah. And so, you know, what they note here is that some 80 unicorns raised funding rounds of $500 million to, you know, a handful of companies. What do you think? I know that while you were at Crunchbase, that was a trend you covered a lot, was those kind of super giant rounds,
yeah,
$100 million plus rounds. What do you, you know, what are your feelings on the later stage investing at this point? Anything that stuck out for you in this report about that late or super late stage investing?
I mean, like, so there's a couple of numbers that definitely bear mentioning, you know, from Crunchbase. And it's that like deal volume in terms of like late stage, so that's like Series C and beyond, you know, that's down. Dollar volume is relatively flat. And, you know, Crunchbase projects that it's up, you know, about $200 million relative to last quarter. So equaling out to $35.7 billion worth of late stage dollar volume, you know, in aggregate worldwide. which is great. But again, you know, deal volume is down. And so that means that on average, you know, round size is going up. And, you know, I think that this is a continuation of a longstanding pattern, which is that, you know, taking away the fluctuations or the perturbations in, you know, dollar volume over time, which again is sort of like dictated by like incredibly big rounds. And so those numbers are pretty easily skewed quarter to quarter. You know, I think like what Bear's mentioning is that there continues to be a really, really like even during this crazy time that we're all living through, you know, there's a pretty robust market, at least it seems, in at the much later stages of the venture funding life cycle, which continue to invest in these companies in lieu of these companies going out and raising from public markets, right? Like it wasn't so long ago that a company would go out and, you know, instead of using like $100 million as a placeholder value on their S1 saying like, oh, we want to go raise $100 million. And then they go amend it and say, oh, we're really raising $500 million or whatever in our IPO. Like, it wasn't quite so long ago where it was the norm for companies to go out and raise like $1 to $250 million in their, you know, in an IPO. And, you know, why do that now when no doubt, you know, public markets are frothy and a little unstable at the moment, but like, why invite the public scrutiny and moreover the regulatory scrutiny at the moment when there's so much money to be had for later stage companies, you know?
Yeah,
and you don't have to go through the whole like goat rodeo of like a roadshow and all that crap, which would be a huge distraction and probably dangerous during the middle of a pandemic, you know?
Well, yeah, certainly hard to accomplish. You know, I've started hearing about some people taking face-to-face meetings again, which really surprises me. Since March, maybe 16th, I believe I've had two meetings in person, and I was outside for one of those two. And the only table at a restaurant during the other one of those two meetings. So, you know, but very isolated in both cases. Each meeting was with just two other people. So,
I mean, you know, heck, dude, we didn't see each other when you were up in Chicago, you know.
No.
Yeah.
No, and obviously we would have, but that was also the weekend that there was a lot of rioting and looting in Chicago, probably intelligently to delay the flow of folks, put up most of the bridges. So it was very difficult to move from my neighborhood to your neighborhood, which Indeed. Are nearly adjacent.
Indeed. So,
you know, one of the other things that maybe is worth mentioning is that both, the dollar volume and deal volume in both cases of acquisitions of venture backed companies, are the lowest they've been in five quarters.
Yeah.
And that, you know, is something that, both may be a trend for why so many companies, another factor in why so many companies are raising such large and late stage rounds. But also is in some ways, while there might be a silver lining to that cloud, is for the most part probably not great news, right?
No,
because assuming that IPO is not the likely trajectory for many companies today for regulatory and other reasons, that's what a lot of venture capitalists count on, is M&A activity to get their, you know, to unlock the liquidity for them out of their long-held illiquid investments. And so to see the acquisition market not being frothy is unfortunate. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the number of deals actually picks up in another quarter or two, depending on earlier stage funding dynamics, but the dollar volume may not catch back up, you know, which would, I think, mean that as companies run out of their runway, other companies acquire or acqui-hire them at lower multiples than certainly their venture investors would probably like.
For sure.
So,
yeah, and I mean, like one thing to note, like this is the continuation of a trend that's been going on for like at least the past year and a half. Based on my, from the time that I started writing this report to the time that, Janae from Crunchbase sort of took it over after I left the company, dollar volume, again, in terms of M&A, will fluctuate because, like, all it takes is, like, a giant, like, $10 billion deal, like, one quarter to really muck with the numbers. But like, deal volume has been on the decline for, like, 6, 7, 8 quarters at this point. And, yeah, I mean, like, this has been one of the most dramatic drops in terms of recorded deal volume, M&A deal volume that Crunchbase has noted to date. But, there's one thing that I will note, which is that this is based on, quote unquote, venture-backed companies. Like, there's an entire universe of companies that that Crunchbase and other data sets may capture, like, oh, there was an M&A event with this company. But, if there was no prior known venture funding for that company, that company wouldn't be counted in this sort of data set, even if they did end up getting an acquisition. So it's also just like really important to note that, in the world of venture, there is sort of like this really big dark pool that's really hard to quantify sometimes.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. There was a mention of China in this article, but one of the charts that I think used to kind of make it in, but I didn't see any references to here were what you typically call the balance of power, and that's how much both by deal count and dollar volume, how much venture dollars in deals are in, usually the comparison historically was North America, versus the rest of the world. I think that, for a while now, it's been maybe would have been valuable or interesting to look at China as a second, kind of major subset there. But do you have any thoughts or have you come across any other interesting data that looks at balance of power, which when we covered this last quarter was moving back towards more in the United States, as obviously the coronavirus crisis was a bigger deal up, chronologically first in China.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a long, complex compound question.
No. I get what you're saying. So short answer is, at least as far as this quarter, Q2 2020 is concerned, I don't have a lot of insight into that because, again, the numbers weren't put forth in this chart. I'm sorry, in this report. But that being said, I could find those numbers. I do have not right now because we're recording. I do have a Crunchbase Pro account. I could probably find that information out. At least based on reported information at this time. My guess would be if I was, forced to make a guess one way or the other, my guess would be that probably things continued to go in favor of North America vis-a-vis the rest of the world, mostly due to the fact that North America, really just the United States, has been a little bit more laissez-faire when it comes to a public health response to coronavirus, which is a very polite way of saying that even when Americans should probably be staying home, nobody has been made to stay home. And that probably extends to startup fundraising as well. At least anecdotally, things at least in China, which is the second biggest country in terms of you know, dollar volume worldwide. I mean, things really, really, like, really shut down in China during all this earlier in the year. And I know things have picked up a little bit, but I know that their economy also continues to sort of deal with some of the aftershocks of this, of their public health response to this, as well as other structural issues in their economy that were present before coronavirus sort of became a thing.
You know, in the article kind of concluded with some thoughts about IPOs. Not a lot of crazy news there, although they noted that, of course, most of those were clustered into June as the markets in which those things had started trading had, for the most part, you know, responded really positively by June.
Yeah.
Anything of note in your opinion on the IPO front in Q2?
I mean, from Q2, shit, dog. Like, I guess good news for Crunchbase long term, and by proxy, good news for maybe good. Who knows? Maybe good news for me as a incredibly tiny shareholder in the company. You know, based on you know, an employee stock option program. I guess Crunchbase now has a couple of, you know, will at some point have a couple of publicly traded, you know, market comps, you know, to compare itself against. So ZoomInfo is going public. And then interestingly, Dun & Bradstreet, which was previously publicly traded, was taken private, I think, in 2018. Maybe 2009, like early 2019. Anyways, they were taken private by a consortium of private equity type folks. And then now they're being spun back out into public markets, at least according to an S-1 filed by the company in late June. So I guess, yeah, like Crunchbase is going to have some public market comps, which is great. But as far as everything else goes, things seem really, really quiet. What was interesting, I think the one thing that was, you know, notable was, Graham, how much do you know about a company called Vroom? V-R-O-O-M?
I do not know much about Vroom.
Okay, so Vroom, which is very fun to say, is a, it's a marketplace for used cars. And, you know, they do a bunch of stuff through the internet. It's really... You know, it's like this dazzling, modernized, like fun user experience, yada yada. All this stuff that like the internet promises to consumers. But you know, there was this like, you know, questioning of like, well, why is Vroom, you know, going public now, and why is its shares being marked up? Like they priced and then they repriced higher before they went public. And the question was, is why? And I think part of the answer is that if you look at other parts of the economy right now, specifically as it relates to the automotive sector, things are, in case you have not been paying attention, things are not going so great. And, you know, as large car rental networks, for example, end up needing to liquidate some of their assets in order to meet obligations to lenders and to maintain some level of solvency over time, you know, there's going to be a large influx of supply to market makers such as Vroom, which again is very fun to say. Over time,
as a kid, I was, you know, vroom. Everybody, you know, play car driving.
Vroom. Anyway. No, I mean, so like that I think is one of the standouts. And then additionally, you know, there's been some rumblings about, and this is a little bit now just from the beginning of Q3 rather than the end of Q2. More recently, there's been a couple of filings from bigger biotech companies that are developing vaccines of or related to a bunch of things, but have also sort of doubled down on their vaccine efforts for COVID-19. So I think that'll be the thing to look for in Q3 is going to be all these, you know, fancy biotech companies that, because they sort of operate on a different sort of cycle in terms of their venture fundraising and then going public. I think the Q3 is probably going to be quite exciting for the biotech space, but I don't necessarily see a lot of reason for, to be honest, I don't see a lot of reason for optimism in stuff like SaaS or related sectors, at least as far as the IPO space goes. This being said, as we record today, which is
July 7th,
July 7th, 2020, the year of our Lord. it is reported, finally, after many years of speculation, that Palantir has confidentially filed to go public. And so I'm personally very excited to see their S1 whenever it does drop. But that'll probably be another big one for Q3 as well, assuming things don't totally hit the skids and they need to put that off till Q4 or later.
You know, I guess one question, which is not making a joke about Palantir, but kind of a what does your crystal ball say today kind of question is.
Yeah. Oh, man. So many deep cuts with the crystal ball reference with respect to Palantir. All right. Continue. Yeah.
But, you know, if today there were a substantial likelihood, either through vaccine or other methods, that COVID were getting under control, you know, kind of worldwide in a big way, which certainly is not the way I actually feel.
Yeah, sure.
What do you think that the public markets would do? Which I know is not our kind of main topic to cover. But
No. But it's really...
But, you know, I guess it kind of surprises me while I, you know, am what I deem, I think, as a nearly eternal optimist. You know, I've been honestly surprised that the public markets have remained as high as they have. And so I think they would, which is not to say that I want them to go down, far from it. But I kind of think that the markets, if we did arrive at a, you know, likelihood that in some foreseeable period of time, this would be quite under control, I think the markets would be on quite a tear, personally.
Yes and no. Because, like, at least at this point, there's been a lot of... I mean, not to, like, you know, not to, like, burst your bubble there, Graham, but or anybody else who's listening to this, which 52 minutes in, thank you so much for sticking with us. I think that might sort of discount the structural damage to the economy that's already been done by COVID-19. And although the, you know, the Federal Reserve has continued to, like, print a lot of money, and that money has been directed to the coffers of, you know, the large corporations that, you know, make up various stock indices, as well as smaller companies. You know, at least yesterday, as we record, I know that the Treasury and the SBA released their, like, they disclosed all the data around any company that's raised or received over $150,000 from the PPP program, which we discussed on a prior show. Like,
maybe interesting for a future topic for us to talk about.
Well,
it's obviously well beyond startups, but
no. Well, it's like, I mean, again, like, what happens in the broader, like, macro economy in terms of, well, the macro economy, and then, you know, the stock market, which is definitely not the economy, but influences a lot of decision making around, around obviously the financial sector, because, I mean, publicly traded companies serve as the, like, benchmark for comparing you know, privately held companies against after a certain size. But like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a weird. It'll be weird going forward to see what happens here.
Yeah. No, I think the last observation that I'll make, and we're jumping maybe back to near the beginning, but one of the things that I had been looking for a while, as a venture investor, was some sort of bellwether of how far off valuations are.
Yeah.
And while I'm not sure, and I don't know if the article even discloses any of these sources, the article seems to throw around that in general valuations seem to be off 20% to 30%. You know, in the startup and early stage valuation is 60% of VCs report that early stage valuations have dropped by 20 to 30%. I wonder what the other 40% of VCs report, but
yeah.
You know, in any case, that was the first time that I've seen any quantifying of that number, which again,
no,
I've been wondering how, you know, and again, I'm sure that'll continue to fluctuate, but it was interesting and good. You know, to hear some, you know, some numbers around that. Because, again, that's been one of the first and biggest questions I've been asking since this whole thing started is how and how much this will affect valuations of, you know, privately held venture-backed companies.
Yeah, so. I mean, and the numbers relayed in this, you know, report from Crunchbase is, you know, it's helpful that you know, these numbers were put together, but I don't think it takes a vast, you know, survey or data science team to indicate that you know, what we're all going through right now is probably not great for the market, and by proxy, probably not great for valuations either. Which at least in the short term could yield venture investors better deals that they make today, because they get. At least in theory, could get a larger chunk of companies relative to the amount of money that they put in if valuations are lower. But simultaneously, any sort of existing portfolio companies that they may hold, you know, may face you know, flat or you know, knock on wood, against this down rounds going forward.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I mean, it's one of those, like, dumb, you know, journalistic slash narrative, you know, bromides or whatever. But it's like, oh, yeah, like, only time will tell. And in this case, like, it's literally true. Like, you know, it's going to take a relatively long time for valuation information to shake out. And you know, private markets being private, there might also be a very strong incentive to not have, you know, information about valuations at a pretty granular level be made public, especially now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so who knows?
Well, I you know, do you have any final thoughts or wrap up? I guess, again, going back to, you know, my, I think, first comment on the subject was, you know, it's great to, you know, cover this once a quarter.
Yeah.
And I think overall, this is better news than I expected it to be, which is certainly not by any stretch of the imagination to say that this is good news. Unfortunately, yeah. given the gravity of the situation.
I think that the general takeaway that I get from this report is that it could always be worse.
Like, oh boy.
No, I mean, not to be, like, you know, dark and nihilistic here, but like, yeah, I mean, is the market, you know, down in terms of deal and dollar volume relative to, you know, same time last year? Yeah, of course it is. Has everything gone to zero? No, not at all.
Yeah.
And that's an indicator that, that there still remains a sort of, you know, a lot of room to grow amongst, you know, early stage and later stage companies that are trying to do something, you know, new and interesting with new and interesting technologies.
And I continue to believe that there are and will be opportunities out there.
For sure.
Like very much more in many cases because of COVID circumstances in companies that are otherwise fundamentally good.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
startup and later stage.
Yeah. And I mean, and things are like, I mean, it's important to acknowledge that like, and I mean, this is going to be an obvious point, but like what we're all living through right now, definitely will have an impact on the type of companies that get founded and funded over the next couple of years, right? Like just in the same way that like the financial crisis of 2007 through 2009 sort of gave birth to the sharing economy, right? You know, the Airbnb, Uber, you know, Lyft, all these companies were founded like right in the thick of a time where a lot of people had cars sitting around where they may have been out of work, where, you know, there was an asset lying around that needed to be used in some way or another. You know, that market dynamic shaped the entire generation of companies. And not to pun too hard here, but I will venture a guess that the 2020 cohort of companies is probably not going to involve like meetups or like ride sharing or a whole bunch of other type things. But, you know, like as we discussed in our sort of good news show and in others, you know, that's not to say that there isn't opportunities in new sectors that have emerged reemerged as very interesting market opportunities in the face of this pandemic.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It'll be interesting to see what those opportunistic or next kind of cohort of companies that come out of this set of circumstances are.
Well, they're all going to be virtual conferences.
That's right.
You know, weird VR experiential stuff. figuring out how to give everybody little doses of CBD. I'm trying to think of other stuff that's going on right now. I get you. Like, yeah, things are changing, and the market landscape of startups is also evolving. And I also very much look forward to seeing what the 2020, 2021 cohort of startups end up looking like.
Well, Jason, with that, do we want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I guess. Good I don't have anything and, else to add.
Stay safe, everybody.
Everybody, stay safe and be well.